Chapter 47. The dinner was begun by an ancient form of culinary drama. A man, Suma described as a shikibocho master, appeared on his knees beside a plain board holding a fish that Pitt correctly identified as a bonito. Wearing a costume of silk brocade and a tall pointed cap, the shikibocho master displayed steel chopsticks and a wooden-handled long straight knife. With hands moving the implements in a dazzling blur, he sliced up the fish using a prescribed number of slashes. At the conclusion of the ritualistic performance, he bowed and withdrew.
"Is he the chef?" asked Lauren.
Suma shook his head.
"No, he is merely a master of the fish-slicing ceremony. The chef, who specializes in the Epicurean art of seafood preparation, will now reassemble the fish, which will be served as an appetizer."
"You employ more than one chef in your kitchen?"
"I have three. One, as I mentioned, who is expert in fish dishes, one who is a master at cooking meats and vegetables, and one who concentrates his talents on soups only."
Before the fish was served, they were given a hot salty tea with sweet cookies. Then steaming oshibori towels were passed out for everyone to cleanse their hands. The fish was returned, the slices delicately replaced in their exact position, and eaten raw as sashimi. Suma seemed to enjoy watching Giordino and Diaz struggle with their chopsticks. He was also mildly surprised to see Pitt and Lauren eat with the twin ivories as though they were born to them. Each course was served ably and smoothly by a pair of robots whose long arms picked up and set dishes with incredible swiftness of movement. Not a particle of food was dropped, nor the sound heard of a dish clatter as it met the hard tabletop. They only spoke when asking if the diners were through with a particular course.
"You seem to be obsessed with an automated society," Pitt addressed Suma.
"Yes, we take pride in our conversion to a robotic empire. My factory complex in Nagoya is the largest in the world. There, I have computerized robotic machines building 20,000 fully functioning robots every year."
"An army producing an army," said Pitt.
Suma's tone became enthusiastic.
"Unwittingly, you've touched a chord, Mr. Pitt. We have already begun Japan's new robotic military forces. My engineers are designing and constructing completely automated warships without human crews, aircraft flown entirely by robots, robotic-operated tanks that drive and fight by remote command, and armies composed of hundreds of thousands of armored machines armed with powerful weaponry and long-range sensors that can leap over 50 meters and travel at 60 kilometers an hour. Their ease of repair and their high-level sensory capabilities make them nearly invincible. In 10 years, no superpower military force will be able to stand against us. Unlike your Pentagon generals and admirals, who rely on men and women to fight, bleed, and die in combat, we'll be able to fight large-scale battles without a single human casualty."
A solid minute passed as the Americans at the table attempted to imagine the magnitude of Suma's revelation. The concept seemed so vast, so futuristic, that they all had trouble accepting the fact that robotic armies were about to become a here-and-now proposition. Only Giordino appeared indifferent to the immense scope of cyborg warfare. "Our mechanical chaperone claims he was consecrated," he said, casually picking at the fish.
"We combine our religion, Shintoism, with our culture," answered Suma, "believing that inanimate as well as animate objects are blessed with a soul, an advantage we have over you in the West. Our machines, be they industrial tools or a samurai's sword, are revered as humans. We even have machines that teach many of our workers to behave as machines."
Pitt shook his head. "Sounds self-defeating. You're taking jobs away from your own people."
"An archaic myth, Mr. Pitt," replied Suma, tapping his chopsticks on the table. "In Japan, men and machines have developed a close relationship. Shortly after the turn of the century, we'll have 1 million robots doing the work of 10 million people."
"And what happens to the 10 million people who are laid off?"
"We export them to other countries, just as we export our manufactured goods," said Suma quietly. "They become good, law-abiding citizens of their adopted nation, but their loyalty and economic connections will still be tied to Japan."
"A kind of worldwide brotherhood," said Pitt. "I've seen how it works. I recall watching a Japanese bank being built in San Diego by Japanese architects, Japanese developers, Japanese construction workers, all using Japanese equipment and Japanese building supplies imported aboard Japanese ships. The local contractors and suppliers were cut out completely."
Suma gave an uncaring shrug.
Economic conquest has no rules. Our ethics and morals come from a different breeding ground than yours. In Japan, honor and discipline are knotted tightly to loyalties, to the emperor, family, and the corporation. We are not bred to venerate democratic principles or charitable generosity. The United Way, volunteer work, charity events to raise money for starving people in Africa, and organizations for providing aid to foster children in third world nations are virtually unheard of in my country. We concentrate our benevolent efforts on taking care of our own. He paused and then motioned to the robots as they re-entered the room balancing trays. Ah, here comes the next course. The bonita was followed by individual wooden trays that held unpeeled ginkgo nuts, threaded with pine needles and a pyramid of sliced abalone. Then came a flower soup, a clear broth with single orchids floating in the bowls. Lauren closed her eyes as she savored it. "It tastes as wonderful as it looks," she said. Suma nodded. "Japanese haute cuisine is created to delight the eye as well as the palate. A successful attempt at visual and taste perfection," Pitt observed. "Are you a bon vivant, Mr. Pitt?" asked Suma. "I enjoy the pleasure of a gourmet meal, yes." "Are your tastes varied?" "If you mean do I eat most everything, the answer is affirmative." "Good." Suma clapped his hands. "Then you're in for an exciting and harmonious treat." Lauren thought the dinner was half over, but it had barely begun. A truly exceptional display of tasty dishes, their ingredients artistically arranged, arrived in a steady stream. Figs in sesame sauce, rice with basil, another soup with egg yolk, neatly sliced conger eel, radish, and mushrooms, accompanied by a row of sea urchin. Several kinds of fish, including turbot, snapper, pike, and squid, wrapped in a collage with varied types of seaweed, and lotus root mixed with intricately cut mussels, cucumber, and zucchini. A third soup was served with pickled vegetables, rice, and sesame. At last, dessert was presented, consisting of several sweet fruits, and the feast concluded with the inevitable cup of tea. "A final meal for the condemned?" Diaz asked harshly. "Not at all, Senator," Suma replied in a congenial voice. "You and Congresswoman Smith will be returning to Washington within 24 hours on board my private jet." "Why not now?" "You must be instructed of my goals first. Tomorrow I will personally conduct you and Congresswoman Smith on a tour of my Dragon Center and demonstrate the source of Japan's new might." "A Dragon Center?" repeated Diaz curiously. "For what purpose?" "You don't know, Senator, about the nuclear bomb cars our host has spread around half the world?" Pitt asked, provokingly. Diaz was uncomprehending. "Bomb cars?" "Suma here wants to play hardball with the big boys, so he's dreamed up a blue-ribbon extortion plot. As soon as his highly touted Dragon Center is completed, he can push a button and cause the detonation of a nuclear bomb at any location his robots park a car with a built-in bomb." Lauren's eyes went wide with shock. "Is this true? Japan has secretly built a nuclear arsenal?" Pitt nodded at Suma. "Why don't you ask him?" Suma stared at Pitt like a mongoose eyeing a cobra. "You're a very astute man, Mr. Pitt. I'm told it was you who put Mr. Jordan and his intelligence people onto our method of smuggling the warheads into your country. I freely admit that hiding them in automobile air conditioning compressors was a cagey act of genius on your part. You almost got away with a clean operation, that is, until a bomb accidentally exploded aboard your auto transport ship." Frowning, baffled, Lauren asked, "What do you hope to gain?" "Nothing deep and unfathomable," answered Suma. "Using your slang, Japan has always been on the short end of the stick. Raw, universal anti-Japanese prejudice is deeply ingrained in the White West. We have been looked down on as an odd little Oriental race for 300 years. The time has come to grasp the dominance we deserve." An angered flush crept into Lauren's face. "So you'd launch a war that would slaughter millions of people for nothing but false pride and greed? Didn't you learn anything from the death and destruction you caused in the 1940s? Our leaders went to war only after the Western nations strangled us to death with trade embargoes and boycotts. What we lost then in lives and destruction we've since surpassed in expansion of economic power. Now we are being threatened again by international ostracism and world enmity merely due to our diligent efforts and dedication to efficient trade and industry. And because our great economy is dependent on foreign oil and minerals, we can never again allow ourselves to be dictated to by Washington politics, European interests, or Middle East religious conflict. With the Kaiten Project, we have the means to protect ourselves and our hard-won economic gains.
The Kaiten Project, Diaz repeated, never having heard of it before.
His sordid plan to blackmail the universe, Pitt explained caustically.
You're flirting with fire, Lauren said to Suma. The United States, the Soviet Union, and Europe will band together to destroy you.
They will back off when they see what it will cost them, Suma said confidently. They'll do little but hold press conferences and declare they will solve the problem through diplomatic means.
You don't give a damn about saving Japan, snapped Diaz suddenly. Your own government would be horrified if they were aware of this monster you've created. You're in this for yourself, a personal power grab. You're a power-mad maniac.
You are right, Senator, Suma said in quiet control. In your eyes, I must appear as a maniac intent on supreme power. I won't hide it. And like all the other maniacs of history who were driven to protect their nation and its sovereignty, I won't hesitate to use my power to guide expansion of our race around the globe while protecting our culture from the corruptions of the West.
Just what do you find so corrupting about the Western nations? Demanded Diaz.
A look of contempt came into Suma's eyes.
Look to your own people, Senator. The United States is a land of drug addicts, mafia gangsters, rapists and murderers, homeless and illiterates. Your cities run rampant with racism because of your mixed cultures. You are declining, as did Greece and Rome and the British Empire. You've become a cesspool of deterioration, and the process is unstoppable.
So you think America is undermined and finished as a superpower, said Lauren in an annoyed voice.
You do not find such decay in Japan, Suma replied smugly.
God, but you're hypocritical. Pitt broke out laughing, turning every head at the dining table.
Your quaint little culture is rife with corruption in the highest political levels. Reports of scandals fill your newspapers and TV stations on a daily basis. Your underworld is so powerful it runs the government. Half your politicians and bureaucrats are on the take, openly receiving money for political influence. You sell highly secret military technology to the communist bloc for profit. Living costs are ridiculously out of sight for your own people, who pay twice what Americans pay for goods manufactured by Japanese corporations. You steal high-tech advancements wherever you can find them. You have racketeers who regularly disrupt company meetings to extract payoffs. You accuse us of racism when your best-selling books promote anti-Semitism. Your department stores display and sell black Sambo mannequins and dolls, and you sell magazines on street newsstands depicting women in bondage. And you have the gall to sit there and claim you have a superior culture. That's garbage.
Amen, my friend, said Diaz, raising his teacup. Amen.
Dirk is 100% right, Lauren added proudly. Our society isn't perfect, but people to people, our overall quality of life is still better than yours.
Suma's face altered into a mask of wrath. The eyes were as hard as topaz on the satin-smooth face. His teeth were set. He spoke as if cracking a whip.
50 years ago, we were a defeated people, reviled by the United States. Now, all of a sudden, we are the winners and you have lost to us. The poisoning of Japan by the United States and Europe has been stopped. Our culture will prevail. We will prove to be the dominant nation in the 21st century.
You sound like the warlords who prematurely counted us out after Pearl Harbor, Lauren reminded him curtly. The United States treated Japan far better after the war than we'd have expected if you were the victors. Your armies would have raped, murdered, and pillaged America just as you did China.
Besides us, you still have Europe to contend with, warned Diaz. Their trade policies are not nearly as tolerant and patronizing as ours toward Tokyo. And if anything, the new European common market is going to dig in against your economic penetration. Threatened by nuclear blackmail or not, they'll close their markets to Japanese exports.
Over the long term, we will merely use our billions of cash reserves to slowly buy up their industries until we have a base that is impregnable. Not an impossible operation when you consider that the 12 largest banks in the world are Japanese, constituting almost 3/4 of the total market value of all the rest of the foreign banks. That means we rule the world of big money.
You can't hold the world hostage forever, said Pitt. Your own government and people will rise up against you when they discover the world's warheads are aimed at the Japanese islands instead of the United States and the Soviet Union. And the possibility of another nuclear attack becomes very real should one of your car bombs accidentally detonate.
Suma shook his head.
Our electronic safeguards are more advanced than yours and the Russians. There will be no explosions unless I personally program the correct code.
You can't really start a nuclear war, Lauren gasped.
Suma laughed. Nothing as stupid and cold-blooded as what the White House and Kremlin might attempt. You forget, we Japanese know what it's like to suffer the horror of atomic warfare.
No, the Kaiten project is far more technically sophisticated than masses of missile warheads aimed at cities and military installations. The bombs are designed to be set off in remote, strategically unpopulated areas to create a massive electromagnetic force with the potential of destroying your entire economy. Any deaths or injuries would be minimal.
You really plan to do it, don't you? Said Pitt, reading Suma's mind. You really intend to set off the bombs.
And why not, if circumstances warrant it?
There is no fear of immediate retaliation, since the electromagnetic force will effectively close down all American, NATO, and Soviet communications and weapons systems.
The Japanese industrialist stared at Pitt, the dark eyes cool and tyrannical.
Whether I take that step or not, you, Mr. Pitt, won't be around to find out.
A frightened look swept Lauren's face.
Aren't Dirk and Al flying back to Washington with Senator Diaz and me?
Suma exhaled his breath in a long, silent sigh and shook his head very slowly.
No, I have made them a gift to my good friend Moro Kamatori.
I don't understand.
Moro is an expert hunter. His passion is tracking human game. Your friends and the three intelligence operatives who were captured during their attempt to destroy the center will be offered a chance to escape the island, but only if they can elude Moro for 24 hours.
Kamatori gave Pitt a sub-zero stare.
Mr. Pitt will have the honor of being the first to make the attempt.
Pitt turned to Giordino, the trace of a grin on his saturnine face.
See, I told you so.